Man, I think a lot of people thought Easter Sunday counted for two. We are missing a lot of people this morning. Man, it was a great Sunday, but I don't think it counts for two. I know that some of the ladies, or a lot of ladies, are gone on the ladies' trip, and we look forward to them being back. At least my family does. Look forward to them being back. So we've been living, scrounging and digging in the pantry for cans of stuff we didn't know existed. I mean, it's been desperate times in the Welch household. I know. So it's been a big, good weekend. It's been a big weekend. There's been a lot going on in our area over the past weekend. I don't know if you heard about it, but this past weekend, the NFL draft was held in downtown Nashville, and they estimated there was over 150,000 people extra in the downtown area at the end of Broadway. They just built a stage that went all the way across Broadway, and there were just hundreds of thousands of people. And in addition, this weekend, there was the Nashville Marathon, the Music City Marathon. That's like 50,000 extra people. And then there was a Jimmy Buffett concert, and who knows with that. And then I listened yesterday afternoon. There was an NPR show on from the Ryman that was the Live From Here. It used to be Prairie Home Companion. They were doing that there. So there's just thousands of extra people just thrown into the mix of the however many NFL fans were there. But my favorite story from the whole weekend, and maybe you heard about it or saw it, it came from a bachelorette party. Now, you may not know this, but Nashville has become a bachelorette party capital. I mean, it's called the Las Vegas of the South, and ladies, if you're planning on getting married, your destination for your bachelorette party is just up the road. There are, every weekend, just dozens and dozens, probably hundreds of bachelorette parties there, or as Nashville calls them, Nashvillians call them, the woo-woo girls. If you're ever down in downtown, you hear, woo-woo, that's the bachelorette parties. So the woo-woo girls are always now in power. And apparently, the NFL draft, which was scheduled over a year ago, was breaking news to some of these bachelorette parties. They just learned about it a few days ago. And one particular bridal party in particular was vowing retribution because of how it affected their plans. So I'm going to do my best, based on the quotes and the picture, to depict these ladies accurately. We come here to listen to country music, not hang out with the football boys. That's bride Kara right there. And her bridesmaid Cindy took it a step further. I tell you who's going to pay for this, my husband. No football next season. I'm talking no Super Bowl. Because my friend only gets married once. Draft happens every year. So anyway, that is bridesmaid Cindy right there. I didn't actually hear her talk, but I'm pretty sure that was it, right? I mean, like, just right on the money there. But it is, I mean, I listen to that and I read that and I'm like, it is hard to believe someone could so completely misunderstand this situation as to blame their spouse for hundreds of thousands of people gathering and packing the streets of downtown Nashville. Like, he was just trying to ruin her weekend. And so he got all his buddies together and said, hey, in the meantime, no kidding, a GoFundMe account has been set up for Cindy's husband. So, like, you got to live with that, buddy. Here's some money. Oh, wow. So, this morning we're going to be looking at another one of Jesus' miracle studies out of the Gospel of Mark, which we've been kind of going through. We skipped ahead last week to the end, but we're going to kind of come back to where we were. And if we haven't, if you're not paying really close attention, some of these miracle stories will start to run into one another, and you'll start to think, oh, I've heard, you know, you've heard one miracle story, you've heard them all, that sort of thinking. And we might have a tendency to sort of tune it out, or at the very least, misunderstand the situation ourselves. So remember that all of Jesus' miracles, that every miracle Jesus does, everything from turning water into wine to resurrection and everything in between, all of the leprosy cleansing and walking on the water and calming the storm and healing the blind and the deaf and the lame and raising the dead, all of the Jesus miracles, every one of them, feeding the multitudes, they are all about the presence. They symbolize the presence and the power of the kingdom of God and the full restoration of creation that's to come. That every miracle Jesus does is to show the heart of God. So for instance, when John the Baptist later becomes imprisoned by King Herod, and he sends some disciples to ask Jesus, "Are you really the one who's to come?" Jesus says in Matthew 2:5, he says, "Here's the proof. This is how the proof that I am who I claim to be, that the blind receive sight, the lame walk, those who have leprosy are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead are raised, and the good news is proclaimed to the poor." That's his, "I'll show you who I am." And you want to know what God is like? You don't want to know what God really wants? Watch what Jesus does. If you want to know what the creator of the universe is really like, what his nature is like, watch what Jesus does. The miracles are not so much authenticity, like to prove he really was that. They are about showing who God really is. And so if you know God, then when you see Jesus, you'll recognize him. Does that make sense? Because the miracles don't prove that Jesus is the Messiah. You'd have to know God to understand the miracles. See, when Jesus feeds the thousands of people, well, somebody's standing on the sideline, and you can, if you don't really know God, you can look at that and you can say, that was just a trick. They had food hidden out in the crowds. If you don't really know who God is, then you watch Jesus casting out a demon or healing someone who's lame, and you say, oh, that guy was faking. And right, we've seen people being healed maybe on TV by faith healers or some others claiming to that some miracle's taking place. And we look with skeptical eyes, right? I think, oh, that person's a plant. They really had the ability to walk all along and they're just faking it, right? Well, people were doing that with Jesus because they didn't know God. Which brings us to our story from Mark chapter 8. Because Jesus is going to perform yet another miracle. This is from Mark chapter 8, verses 22 through 26. And they came to Bethsaida, which is the hometown out of Peter, Andrew, James, and John. This is right where they were from. They come to Bethsaida, and some people brought a blind man and begged Jesus to touch him. He took the blind man by the hand and led him outside the village. When he had spit on the man's eyes and put his hands on him, Jesus asked, "Do you see anything?" He looked up and he said, "I see people. They look like trees walking around." Once more, Jesus put his hands on the man's eyes. Then his eyes were opened, his sight was restored, and he saw everything clearly. Jesus sent him home saying, "Don't even go into the village." Now, this is a strange one, isn't it? I mean, you probably have heard this story before, or you've heard it talked about before. This is a really strange miracle on a few different levels. Like, why does Jesus spit in this guy's eyes, for one? I mean, that's what jumps out to me. I don't know about you, but someone spitting in someone else's eyes, that's an attention grabber in our culture, right? And why does it take, for us who are believers, we're looking at this and we're like, why does it take Jesus two tries? I mean, why didn't this guy just, you know, hear Jesus' voice and immediately receives? Why would Jesus do all this stuff and it still takes two tries? So it's a really strange story. And if, by the way, you don't believe that Jesus was really the Messiah, you have to say, then someone made this story up. So if you're trying to make up a story about Jesus being powerful, you would not make up this story. Does that make sense? Nobody would make up a story where it looks like the Son of God has to do it twice. Well, we're going to deal with those questions. First, the spit question is the easiest question to answer. Spittle in the ancient world was commonly believed to have medicinal and or magical powers. It was really common in that way. In fact, the rabbis, the Jewish rabbis at that time, they were against magical anything. So they didn't think anything had magical powers, but they did believe it's still in the medicinal properties of saliva. And so Jesus was just kind of using a method with which they were familiar. And in fact, the saliva of a really important person appeared to be or believed to be particularly powerful. So we have a recording, for instance, of a man going up to a Roman emperor and asking him to spit on him so he'll be healed. Right? It was just commonly believed that the saliva of a powerful person would carry something of that person in them. And so Jesus is using a method with which the familiar, sort of like anointing heads with oil, right? As a way to treat illness. How does putting oil on someone's head help them get well? I don't know. There's not a lot of medical proof backing that up, but it was a method with which they were familiar. And so he wasn't doing something rude, or he was just going along so that they could understand what was taking place, that this man was being healed. But to go back to answer the second question, the tougher question was, why does it take 2 tries? And that's one we really need to dig into just a little bit this morning. But we've got to do that, to answer that question, we've got to get a little bit of context. We've got to understand where we are in Mark and what's going on here. So back at the beginning of chapter 8, just a couple of weeks ago, we talked about this, the feeding of the 4,000. Remember, Jesus and his disciples, they're out kind of in the middle of nowhere. They're on the Gentile side of the lake. And they've got all these people out here. And Jesus says, look, they've been out here 3 days. They got nothing to eat. You need to feed them. The disciples, again, they don't get it, and Jesus tells them to gather up food. They do, and Jesus takes this handful of fish and a few loaves of bread, and he disperses it and feeds thousands of people, and they take up 7 baskets of leftovers when it's all said. They fed 4,000 people with literally a handful of food. And so it was pretty amazing miracle. But right after that miracle, right there at the end, in the same paragraph, we would say, we get this account. It says, and then the Pharisees came up and began to question Jesus. And they were trying to test him, right? They asked him for a sign from heaven. Jesus sighed deeply. And when it says, for those of you who are married, you know what I'm talking about. The deep sigh. Jesus sighed deeply. That's exasperation, right? He sighed deeply and said, why does this generation ask for a sign? Truly I tell you, no sign will be given to it. So Jesus has just fed thousands of people with a handful of food, and now the Pharisees want proof that Jesus is who he claims to be. I mean, that is bridesmaid Cindy Dentz right there. That is not seeing the situation. They watched him feed thousands of people with this much food. And then they wanted proof. If you don't get it, when you see the feeding of the thousands, if you don't believe him after that, they're not going to believe him. It doesn't matter what he did, they're not going to get it. In a sense, we might say that they're kind of blind to Jesus' identity. It's not that they couldn't see, like they physically saw it, but that they just refused to see. They couldn't see who Jesus really was. They believed Jesus was this one thing. They had this one thing fixed in their mind. This is who Jesus is. He's an agitator. He's a problem maker. He's an upstart. He's going to cause people's deaths because he's stirring up trouble. Right? He's a threat. However they viewed him as this one thing. And because of that, they already had him figured out. I already know what Jesus is. Jesus is a threat. Jesus is a troublemaker. And so they have him all figured out. So that's why they couldn't see who he truly was. Anytime you pigeonhole Jesus and think you have him all figured out, you miss what else he really is. And that's a really dangerous position to hold. So when Jesus leaves there, right after he leaves, he tells these Pharisees this, he and the disciples, they get in a boat, and they start heading back across to the predominantly Jewish side of the lake. And Jesus brings that subject up about the Pharisees, and this is what he says. First we're given a little piece of information. The disciples had forgotten to bring bread, which was a boneheaded move. They're going to need food, right? Except for one loaf, that's enough to feed one person part of one meal. That was all they had with them in the boat. Be careful, Jesus warned them. Watch out for the yeast of the Pharisees and that of Herod. And because the disciples had only brought one loaf, they completely misunderstood. The disciples discussed this with one another, and they said, it's because we have no bread. That's what he's talking about. He's talking about the fact that we have no bread. And aware of their discussion, Jesus asks them, why are you talking about having no bread? Do you still not see or understand? Are your hearts hardened? Do you have eyes but fail to see, and ears but fail to hear? Don't you remember? So seeing is a metaphor for understanding or believing, right? So it's where we get the phrase, seeing is believing, right? Or I'll believe it with my own eyes. You may have heard that. It doesn't make any sense because eyes don't actually believe, right? But we say, I'll believe it with my own eyes, or seeing is believing. Seeing is believing comes from this Roman playwright around this time, Plautus, who once said, a one eyewitness weighs more than 10 hearsays. Seeing is believing all the world over. Can't you see? We say that. Can't you? Means can't you understand? It's why the Marshall Tucker Ban asked the provocative question, can't you see what that woman she's doing to me? Don't you understand what this woman is doing to me, right? So when Jesus touches the blind man for the first time, we get a picture of what it's like to understand a little bit, to see partially. I see people walking around like trees, right? He touches them and he can see just a little bit. He can understand some. And the Pharisees are completely blind to Jesus' identity. But his disciples are kind of like this blind man after one touch. They understand a little bit, but just a little bit. They saw some of who Jesus was, but they were still really fuzzy on the rest of it. You know, they understood Jesus was a miracle worker, but they didn't understand how the miracles worked, or why the miracles worked, or when the miracles worked. They understood Jesus was somehow from God, but they didn't understand what it meant that he was the Messiah. Or when they understand he's the Messiah, which we'll get to next week, they don't understand what that means when they say he's the Messiah. So we do the same thing all the time. And in very practical, everyday language, we do it with the people that we meet, the people we come in contact with. Tommy handed me this great portion of a book that I wished I'd had earlier in the week. But it had a quote in it that was really powerful. It's a guy from an author named Bob Goff. And the book was called Everybody Always. And what he said was, even though we've been touched by God, we still don't see people for who they really are until something happens in us. It's not trees we confuse them for. It's opinions and positions, social issues and status, titles and accomplishments and behaviors. We pigeonhole, we say, I know this guy, he is a blank, and so we know everything about him. I know that lady, I know that she did this, or that she believes that, so she is a blank, fill in the blank, right? We can narrow down everything about a person to one thing. Kids in high school, you get it, right? I know that kid, he is a football player. Or I know that girl, she's in the band. Or I know this guy, he's into heavy metal. Right? That's the one thing we know about someone. And so we think we know everything about them. So we know what it's like to be, even to be touched by God for one time and see a little bit, but we don't understand everything. We know what it's like to need a second touch. We know what it's like to confuse one thing with the whole thing. And as followers of Jesus, we have to rely on Jesus to be our sight. I mean, He's the only one who really sees everything clearly. He's the only one who really understands what's really going on. He's our leader. We need Him in order to see clearly because we're partially blind. And we're going to be partially blind forever. I mean, I'm never going to understand everybody or everything fully. Anything. So we need Jesus if we're going to understand. We need Jesus no matter how well we think we can see, we're missing a lot. So I may know you and may have known you for years and years and years and years and years, and I think I have you all figured out, but I'm wrong because I do not know everything about you. And you may have been a Christian for years and years and years and years and years. You may have read the Bible dozens or hundreds of times, and you think you know everything about Jesus, that you have Him all figured out, and you know exactly what He is, but you're wrong. I'm wrong. It's why Jesus warned His disciples, "Can the blind lead the blind? Will they not both fall into a pit?" When you know that you only have partial vision or limited vision, you walk a lot differently, a lot more carefully, right? If I'm in a room, even in my house, and the lights are dim or it's dark and it's not out and the light's not on, I walk differently than when it's daylight and the shades are up and the lights are on. I walk differently, don't I? I'm a lot more cautious. Even in my own house that I know really well, I walk differently. I'm feeling things out a little bit because I might be wrong about something. And that's what Jesus is alluding to. That you don't really know me. Don't lock in on who you think I am. Or in this case, stop passing judgment on about people based on first impressions and limited knowledge. That was the trap that the Pharisees had fallen into. It was the trap that His disciples were in danger being tempted toward, that they were about to fall into. That's why Jesus warns them. You're getting so close to thinking you have me all figured out and you're going to have me pigeonholed as this one thing, but you're wrong. They thought they had Jesus all figured out. They thought they understood Him and knew what He was about. That's the danger of blindness or partial vision, because you think you have it all figured out, but you don't. So my prayer for you, my prayer for us as a church, is that we recognize our limitations. I am so very cautious whenever someone asks me, "What is the right answer to this particular question?" Do you get that? Like people find out you go to church or find out you're a Christian and they want to know, "What is the right answer to this question?" And I have an answer that I think is right most of the time because I'm an opinionated kind of guy. And if it's a controversial subject, then I've thought about it. I've read about it. I've read what other people thought about it. I've thought about what other people read about it. But when I tell somebody my answer, I'm always very cautious, because I've been wrong before, and I know I have partial vision. My prayer for us is that we will live knowing how limited we are, that we recognize our own limitations, that we withhold judgments about Jesus, and keep growing to see Jesus more clearly. And at the same time, we need to realize that no matter what we know about someone else, whether we know that how much money they have or don't have, we know what their political leanings are, right, left wing, right wing, crazy up the middle, I don't know. No matter what we know about someone else, we don't really know them clearly. You and I may think we know the president really clearly, but we do not. You and I may think we know the leader of the Democratic Party really well, but we don't. We may think we have this actor or singer or actress or famous person or athlete. We may think we have them all figured out, And so we can say, this person is not worth listening to, but we don't. We're wrong. May we ever be the people who reject the yeast of the Pharisees, who withhold our snap judgments on others as we seek to see Jesus more clearly. Withhold our judgments on others as we seek to see Jesus more clearly. That's a prayer worthy of holding on to. And this morning, if you have fallen into that trap, whether it's with Jesus or whether it's with the people you encounter, my encouragement for you is to repent of that trap, to come back, to step back and still seek to know Jesus better, still seek to know your neighbor better. And if we can help you with that, whether it's prayers for strength or forgiveness, to become a child of God this morning, to put on Jesus Christ, we want to help you do that in any way we can. Won't you come as we stand and as we